The question is, do you have too many pots on the stove, too many balls in the air? Those things really represent unfinished business, and unfinished business is the topic of today's call. If you think of that phrase, unfinished business, it's kind of like an unfinished road that hasn't been completed and consequently goes nowhere, or an unfinished bridge that doesn't allow flow of traffic from either direction over it. In other words, unfinished business can be indicated by the lack of a balanced energy flow in two different directions. Today in America, there are two main concerns, and both of these, I think, are indicative of unfinished business or that lack of balanced flow. You can look at the obesity epidemic as one of those situations, and the financial crisis in family situations as being another indication. I think it's kind of easy for us to visualize obesity as unfinished business, with people taking in energy, but as dead ends, just piling up that energy on their bodies instead of moving it or using it effectively. That's not very complicated. With regard to money, though, maybe it's a little more obscure. I would think that the lack of income plagues more people in the world than excessive outgo. That is, their income is less than their spending. Now, in some cases, obviously, there's tremendous spending, shopaholics and so on. But on average, I would guess that that lack of flow in would indicate the imbalance and therefore unfinished business regarding taking in money. If you expand the way we think in terms of this unfinished business, and really that's the goal of today's call, is unfinished business is implicated in almost 100% of illnesses. The reason I say that is because unfinished business as a phrase is synonymous with stress, caused with us being stuck with energy and we don't have specific responses. There we are, with energy, but because we have non-specific responses to the demands that are placed upon us, it just piles up. I believe that finishing unfinished business is an activity that's going to be required in the process to create a balanced physical body weight, or balanced finances, or balanced health, in fact, a balanced life. If you want to look around, you might be able to notice unfinished business as, it could be described in several different ways, as a break or a discrepancy in affinity. That is, the closeness that we want to experience, or there's a discrepancy between our view of reality and the view of other people's, and then there is a break or a discrepancy between the communication. It doesn't flow both ways in a balanced fashion. And so these discrepancies between what we wanted and what we got may feel like compression, that is, we're getting squeezed, or suppression, which is really being squeezed to the point where we feel like we're losing our life force. We could have been pushed away, get away, you know, by people who didn't have the patience or the emotional awareness to recognize what we needed, or maybe they weren't interested in satisfying that need for energy that we wanted, that closeness, that physical communication. And maybe we were told that what we thought, what we saw, or what we felt was not true. We may have had our communications shut down, or rejected, degraded, that is, made fun of, taunted, right? Or we could have been attacked for what we said. We may have been forced to participate in something or prevented from participating in something. Those would be unfinished businesses. I'm sure all of us have heard, don't say that, don't feel that, that didn't hurt, don't cry, you didn't see what you saw, and on and on and on. All things that caused us to question our ability to process information, even though this adult is saying that what we saw in our reality, our understanding, our awareness were not accurate. As children, if our expectations were high, and I think generally speaking, they're going to be, until we learn to reduce them to protect ourselves, which is sad in its own right, But if our expectations were high and they weren't filled by our parents or other people who had that responsibility, we could have experienced those situations as unfinished businesses. Our interpretations of energy flow are what makes them either finished or unfinished. It's totally up to us to create the states of finished business, or if we don't, then we leave them as unfinished business. I think the real great news is that we can finish business no matter how far in the past it was created, or it occurred, or it happened, or we participated in it. No matter how distant it is, we can finish it now. Our thoughts and beliefs create the conditions of unfinished business, and our thoughts and beliefs can now finish that business. We can allow the energy to move by dissolving our resistance to its flow. That's the good news. Let me talk a little bit about demand. Demand. If you expand your view of what demand means, and that would be true for all of us because we can almost have an image of somebody pounding on a desk, I demand this, I demand this. That's not what I'm talking. That's not how I'm describing demand. It's broader, more general. Doesn't mean it's any less impactful. And so if I use the phrase demand in the gym, which are exercises, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to exercise and put demands on my body by lifting weights, for instance, I am signaling the body to grow to handle those demands. Deliberately, we create demands, we put ourselves in position where we have demands on our bodies in order to develop strength or muscle tone or muscle mass. The same thing works if we want to build our cardiorespiratory capacity and fitness. We would put a demand on our lungs and our muscles, and in an effort to do that, we literally would use demands in that way. In economics, it's been taught that demand produces supply. Where there's a demand, people will rise to the occasion and produce the supply. So people, known as the market, demand a product. And then people will get the idea that, if I produce this supply, I'll be able to market it, sell it to these folks. And that's how the products come into being. That's how supply comes into being. In metaphysics, it is commonly taught that supply exists in spiritualized form, awaiting human consciousness to call it forth or to demand it. And we've heard this in various forms. One is ask and ye shall receive. That's an indication of this process that the supply exists. All we have to do is call it forth by asking. And that asking with positive expectancy, boom, equals the delivery of that supply to us. If we consider or imagine what demand is and so on, what people and systems, how they respond to that demand, if we define demand as a requirement for energy, in one form or another, a requirement for energy, now all of a sudden you go, that's a more generalized phrase. That makes a little bit more sense. We can demand food. That is, we have a requirement for energy in the form of food or beverages. We can demand air and water. We have a requirement for energy in the form of air and water. We can demand an increase of muscle strength and size and so on if we go to the gym and that's our inclination and so on. It becomes very clear, very quickly, that the variations of demand are basically unlimited in terms of what they could be. When we trigger a requirement for energy, or something in our environment, some other person, some other thing, triggers that requirement for energy, that's a demand placed upon us. When we're not aware, that means we don't know how, we're ignorant of, it's not stupid, it's just we don't know how to produce an effective response to that demand, now all of a sudden we are burdening the body, we're holding on to that energy that the demand called forth, and there we are, stuck with it until we figure out what to do with it. We pull in that energy immediately upon recognizing a demand. Now we need to know what to do with that energy. And there is the fact If we've got unfinished business, we're still holding on to the energy. We haven't resolved that. Everybody can understand the concept that energy needs to move so it can come to us naturally. We want it to come to us. We want to be able to translate it into an effective form so that we can respond effectively to the demand. That is, we want to produce desirable results in the face of this demand, this requirement. If we take an energy, but we don't move it, we're going to experience some symptoms of this non-movement. Now, I talked about a couple of examples already with obesity and financial scarcity, but you can see it as high blood pressure, anger, cancer, edema, autoimmune diseases, glaucoma, diabetes, and other pressure-related conditions. If you can just imagine, more stuff is going into the system, more stuff is going into the system, more stuff is going into the system, but there is no real movement of it out of the system to its next stage. These natural demands point to natural supply. The truth of existence in the book Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth speaks of these, and I'll call them items of supply, which he refers to as truth of existence, and these are provided to us by divine consciousness, or God, or spirit, however you want to label that supreme creative power. Those items of supply are growth, nutrition and nourishment, health, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, and the system of law and order that exists in the universe. If every one of these vibrations is supplied, it exists, it's on the shelf, it's waiting for us, our real job is to demand them, to simply call them forward, ask for them, and then become aware of their presence in our lives. Seems simple, and I think it is. Maybe not easy, because we haven't been trained, we haven't habituated that sort of a practice. If you can imagine a work situation, or a financial or a family situation, in which a demand is placed on you, that's pretty easy to do. And if you can know how to specifically and effectively respond to that demand, you will respond. That's built into the system. That's, we want to do that. It feels good to do that, to respond effectively to a demand. That's part of the game of life that we enjoy. But if we don't know how to respond, we're going to be stuck with the pressure of that energy. And so you can analogize this to think in terms of the pressure buildup in a pressure cooker that has no release valve. Or a camel that just another straw is being added to its back, and there is no way for it to escape this buildup of weight. Because divine consciousness can and will support us in myriad ways under the truth of existence, that's the promise that Christ refers to, we can create the demands that call forth these supplies. If we have a demand placed on us, let's say in our internal or our external environments, and we have a need, we've got to do something, but we can't determine by ourselves an effective specific response, we can ask for, that is, demand, divine consciousness to help us expand our awareness of the available options. We can ask for additional strength, additional understanding, additional patience, additional compassion, additional courage, whatever it is, anything or everything else that we want, we can ask for. That supply exists. I think people get into trouble, myself included, when we think we are doing things alone, when we believe we're separate, when we believe that we're separated from what we need and what we want. That is, we start to cut ourselves off from the supply that is naturally available to us. It's our awareness or consciousness that either will separate us from capitalize that word, supply, or it is our awareness or consciousness that connects us to that supply. Some people misbelieve that what they want in life is less demands. Oh, I want an easier life. I want less demands. I want less things to do. I want I don't think that's true. I think that's inaccurate. Because demands will inspire us to grow. We need demands in order to grow. Just like that guy or gal going to the gym to build up cardio or to build up muscle mass or tone. We need demands. What we really want is not less demands. Is what we want is to be more aware of how to effectively respond to demands. We can create our own demands by having goals, having desires, having aspirations of how to express ourselves. We want more of those. We want more of those. But we want to be able to respond effectively to those demands so that we can continue to grow, so we can create, and ultimately so that we can come into the awareness that we are expressing divine consciousness in our lives. But in the meantime, we can be expressing all of this energy that we're calling forth to produce businesses, to create relationships, to create financial success, to help other people, to serve people, to you name it. We want more demands. We just want to be more effective at handling them. So as obvious it is that our processing of energy of demands is what can lead to the muscle growth in the gym, is also the thing that causes some people to stay away from the gym because they see it as a loss of energy, not a gaining of energy. And it's the same activity. So what happens is we can grow away from the demands if we reject the energy. If we see it as threatening, if I go to the gym, I'm going to be tired afterwards. That person is going to tend to avoid the gym because he sees it as a loss of energy. He senses it's going to diminish him somehow. We will naturally avoid situations in which we're diminished. Which you can look at procrastination. I was going to do X, but I avoided it. And I think if you could drill down, you would recognize that there's some sort of a processing of information that says this activity has the potential for diminishing me. And so we stay away from it. Really, the activity doesn't have the potential to do that. We, through our interpretations, are the ones who diminish ourselves. So if we look at an activity or a demand and see that we translate it, that it's going to reduce our energy, reduce us, we're going to reject the energy of that activity. We will tend to bond with a demand if we can perceive that it'll get us what we want, and at the same time, if it will increase the likelihood that it'll keep what we don't want away. So think of it like this. This is real simple. Going to the gym is, I'm going to bond with health, and I'm going to keep aging or not fitting into my slacks or my suit or something as the other thing. So though I'm trying to bond with one and keep one away. We're going to tend to reject demands if we perceive that they're taking away or reducing what we have or what we want. Or if that activity, that demand, is going to make us get closer to what we don't want, we are naturally going to want to reject that. We're going to tend to reject demands if they feel like they're threats to us and our needs. And what are our needs? I like to use this model of survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, the need to be right, the need to look good or get approval. Those seven, if we look at a demand as reducing anything in one of these areas, could be freedom. So now you have to do something that somebody else asks you to do or, quotes, demands, end quotes, you to do. Now all of a sudden you could process it as a loss of freedom, and you will automatically start to resist that. You'll start to reject that. So demands tend to determine the direction of our energies and the directions that they have to be used. And so if these things are processed by us as threats, we're going to tend to push them away. If you look back over your childhood, or I look back over my childhood, and I see experiences of demands as bad control, right? Demands by authority. Do it because I'm your adult. You have to respect me because I was born before you. I'm older. Older doesn't necessarily mean wiser. So we used to have that kind of pressure put on us as kids, and this is probably true for everybody in the Western world, that you have to respect your elders. Why? Because they were born earlier? Well, presumably they were wiser, but certainly we notice that's not necessarily the case. And if we've experienced bad control in our childhood, we're going to develop the habit, in all likelihood, that we're going to see other people's demands falling into the same category as bad control, and we're going to reject that. What happens when we fall and find ourselves and perceive ourselves to be in that scenario of more bad control? What we're going to tend to build is not muscles, but contrariness, independence, separation, aggressiveness, rebelliousness, anger, hostility, and the habit of rejecting. A value of bonding with the demand is that we open ourselves to getting energy from it, from taking in the energy. This is, again, the person going to the gym to get value out of that is going to be able to get value out of that. The person that sees it in a totally different light wouldn't get value out of going to the gym and exercising. When we see the opportunity to bond and gain value from it, energetic value from an activity, that demand is, it can help us develop strength or compassion or awareness or a whole bunch of other skills, we end up seeing ourselves as equal. That's an ideal place to be. I've mentioned before Walter Russell. Walter Russell was considered by some to be a modern-day Leonardo da Vinci. And if you don't own that book, I would certainly recommend that at least you download the free copy from philosophy.org. And the book about his life is called The Man Who Tapped the Secrets of the Universe. The Man Who Tapped the Secrets of the Universe by Glenn Clark. I own the book. I think owning books is very important to my happiness, so I own a lot of books. Many of them I haven't read. I just want to own them. At some point, I'm going to get finishing those. Those are unfinished businesses for me. But Walter Russell tells the story that, and this is, by the way, a guy that was world famous in five or six or seven different areas by the time he was done, despite the fact that he had a third grade education. One of his jobs, I think, when he was a teenager, was working at a summer resort. And there were a lot of demands on him because he was running back and forth, delivering things to the guests of that resort. He made a commitment to himself to give all that he could to that demand. Instead of seeing those demands as diminishing them, or him, he saw them as opportunities for his growth. So he put himself into this any time, day or night, he would go to all kinds of extremes to satisfy those demands. And as a result, he learned great lessons of life, not only about himself and how to create what he wanted in life, but he developed tremendous relationships, even though he was a young man, with these wealthy people at this resort, some of whom were lifelong friends from that point on. And that part of the story just in and of itself shows that instead of fighting a demand, instead of running away from a demand, you can bond with a demand, you can embrace that demand, and there is tremendous value. I would say this, each one of us can observe what goes on in our lives, and when we process something as a demand, something we have to do, then see if you can embrace it. See if you can convert that into a want-to. Just try that. And to be able to develop that skill, that habit, I think it could set us free in a lot of different ways. For years now, I've said, a person that can convert a have-to into a want-to is a magical, I'll say, a Merlin-type character. He's an alchemist, or she's an alchemist. If we can convert a have-to and a want-to, now all of a sudden we've got access to tremendous magical energy that can help us translate this into success or prosperity or health or anything else that we want. A downside of rejecting a demand is, there are several of them, is the first thing we have to do is we have to see ourselves as threatened. If we didn't see ourselves as threatened, we wouldn't reject. That rejection is, I'm threatened. That's the interpretation that goes with it. Along with that goes, I'm a possible victim, or I'm a victim. When we start processing that, we are diminishing ourselves. We're making this up. It's not accurate, but we're making it up. And then using the relationship model that I like, we see ourselves in that little circle. And then if we're normal, if we have that propensity for it, we're going to ping up to the big circle of resistance. So both of those, the big circle and the equal circle, the big circle and the little circle are fear-based. We ping back and forth between victim and victimizer, and bullied and bully. And we really do limit our ability to acquire energy. That's problematic, and that we have a different way to do this. I frequently refer to the textbook definition of stress, and today I want to refer to that stress as unfinished business. But the unfinished business is a nonspecific response to a demand. But the trouble is, the word stress is used so commonly, we use it in all the times in the work that I do, that people just hear it as a word. S-T-R-E-S-S. Yeah, it's a word. It's like, no, it's not a word. That word is a symbol. It represents something else. But most people don't have the connecting representation, so it just is a word. It's just noise, stress. It bounces off their head. And it's easy enough to fall into that when something gets overused. So, because there's so little imagery or impact connected to it for the average person, the trouble is, it's such a common threat that we don't even notice it anymore. That's a problem. So let me redefine the word stress and put some imagery to it. And this is just a few examples, but you could do it for yourself. Stress is the friction of life. It's like having sand put into the gears so it grinds and builds up heat, and it makes it much more difficult for the system to function. It derails us on our way to our goals. It misleads us. It causes misdirection of the use of our energy. It makes us use wrong approaches to solve a problem. In fact, bump into walls when we're looking for the doorway. It reduces our intelligence. It creates a state of war in our bodies. It tricks our body into believing that it's not necessary right now to do normal maintenance and repair, and in fact, we'll get to it sometime down the road, sometime later. It tricks us into believing that we can use negatives to create positives, which makes about as much sense as planting weeds out in the field, expecting that we're going to get a great harvest. It's not going to happen. If we take in food, but don't fully digest it, we have unfinished business. If we don't release waste products that are no longer of use to us, we have unfinished business. If we have illness that's manifested, I say that we've got unfinished business that has led up to these manifestations. If we're not achieving success in any areas that's important to us in our lives, we have unfinished business. This past week, I was told of a person that I've known since he was 8 years old, has recently been diagnosed with colon cancer. I knew this kid since 8 years, right up to today, and I remember when he was young, he had trouble with constipation. And just think, constipation, what's that? That's unfinished business, because the process of this digestion is to take in food, chew it, swallow it, digest it, use the energy for whatever it is we're trying to create in our lives, and then let go of the waste products. But constipation is not letting go. It's not finishing the cycle. Constipation is an indication of unfinished business. And waste products are toxic. Our bodies have not developed and will not develop the ability to get value out of waste products. Now, obviously, other life forms, plants and so on, can translate that. There's a breakdown of waste products, and ultimately plants can use those nutrients after that waste product has been broken down. We're not able to do that. So that toxin of that waste product gets reabsorbed into the body and or kills or distorts or harms the cells in the environment. For somebody who's constipated, that's the digestive tract, the colon, the large intestine, that all of that whole end of the processing line where the business is unfinished starts to toxify. What is the description of finished business? Well, I made it up. So why not call it, it is the satisfactory completion of a normal cycle or process regarding energy processing. It's the satisfactory completion. Now, who decides whether it's satisfactory or not? You do, I do, we all do. It's an individual thing. It's our interpretations of this process that either makes it finished or unfinished. We have the right to decide, well, that's done, I'm done, I'm okay. I use my energy model. This is how I see things, and I describe it like this. This is the energy model of a normal cycle or process, and it would include these half a dozen items. First, energy acquisition. Acquisition. This is the getting, the eating, the earning, the grabbing, the taking, the ingesting, the obtaining, right? It is our acquiring of energy. Normal thing. If we were talking about infants, that mother's milk, sucking on the mother's breast, is one of the first forms of energy acquisition. The first one would have been when they got smacked on the rear end and forced into crying to expand and cleanse or clear out their lungs to start breathing. Breathing is an energy acquisition process. The second step is energy translation. Translation depends on what it is we're specifically talking about. We may want to use different words, but it's the processing, the digesting. If we're talking about food, we don't say food translation, we say food digesting. But if we're talking about gold, we would say smelting it. It's a process of giving meaning to the energy that we've ingested, giving value to it. Third thing is energy preservation. Preservation is protecting the energy that we have, protecting it from others, protecting it from loss, protecting it from being dissipated, taking care of it, maintaining it. You can see if you have acquired a new car, that preserving it might be a priority for you. You know, like, oh, I washed it, I waxed it, I cleaned it, I did this, undercoating and whatever else. That's preservation is what really goes on. And for some people, and I see it during where I live, a lot of people are well-to-do. They are so invested in preserving their wealth, even at the cost of being fair, that it's all about protection. No, don't give no health care. We don't want to spend money on having somebody else be healthy. No, that's inappropriate. We want to keep our money. It's like, okay. But energy preservation is a standard part of this process. Energy release is the fourth item. That's letting go of what no longer serves us. I refer to this as, in a physical sense, as a bowel movement or excretion. You can certainly understand that. We exhale. Why? Because the carbon dioxide that's produced as a result of metabolism doesn't serve us, so we exhale it. We perspire the same way, and we urinate. And all this forms of excretion is to eliminate stuff that no longer serves us. It's necessary for our health. And it also makes room for acquisition of new energy. The fifth item is energy expression. This is the utilization of the energy to produce desirable results that are in harmony with our goals. And so if you just think of this, this is your creative expression, the way you invest your energy. And you'll know this is a good expression because it produces joy for you. That act of expression makes you feel good about yourself, about what you're doing, about life, about God, about other people. That energy expression is the name of the game. This is not about expressing things specifically for because somebody else demanded it. That's a different deal entirely. This is a personal, normal expression. And if you have a demand placed on you by somebody else, then if we can convert that into a want to, then we can be back into this fifth item of energy expression. And then six, I've got closure. Closure. This is the feeling that I'm okay with this result. I'm done. It's over. I'm complete. I accept it. I'm flat emotionally. You know, it's a done deal. Let's move on. Closure allows for the repetition of this energy model in the next set of circumstances or in the next environment in which we go and acquire energy and we translate it and we preserve it and so on. When we don't attain this sense of closure, we've got unfinished business. We're stuck in the middle. We're stuck in this process. We're still juggling the hot potato. For me, this lack of closure could be connected to needing to get in the last word or being right, which back to those needs, right, that I talked about earlier, survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, the need to be right, the need to look good or get approval. And if you've got something going on like that, these experiences could indicate unfinished business. Perhaps not being able to verbally defend or protect myself, or not being able to get my point across fully, not being listened to, not being able to express my opinion on a subject in order to be understood, perhaps to get agreement. But I learned long ago, 20, 30 years ago in sales, I didn't really care about agreement. I wanted to be heard. That was more important to me. That's not the makings of a good salesperson, by the way. You definitely want to get your way if you're a salesperson and you're going to be effective. But I'm more interested in expressing my viewpoints. Hello, that's what this talk is about. And if we don't have closure, we're going to still be fighting to get what we want, or we're going to be fighting against what we don't want. We're going to still be at war. I think there's a way to do this. If you made a list, a comprehensive list of all the people that you have known over your life, and I would start as early as I could remember with my mother, my father, siblings, aunts, uncles, cousins, playmates, priests, ministers, rabbis, school teachers, just storekeepers, anybody and everybody you can think of, just put them into a list. You might be able to identify where there is unfinished business because of the way it makes you feel. If you could turn around and look at all the locations that you would have experienced connection to people or things, that is the locations or context, the stores, the schools, the churches, the temples, the playgrounds, the on the sports venues, the roller skating rink, all these different areas, the swimming pool, the other bodies of water you may have swum with in, as well as places you rode your bike in, right? All these locations, all these contexts. If you just made that list as comprehensive as you could, starting with your earliest memories, your home, you know you were in a hospital, possibly, if that's where you were born, and you can start, you know, bedrooms and bathrooms and living rooms and dining rooms and kitchens and basements and attics and barns and all of these different places, you might be able to tell if you've got unfinished business by the way they make you feel. If they put you into state of threat or stress and you can feel it in your body that you want to fight or you want to run, I would say you're looking at a case of unfinished business. We could diagnose using our current conditions to find unfinished business. We literally could reverse engineer or uncover the unfinished business by looking at our current conditions, and I use a fantastic reference manual, Messages from the Body, that give indications of how these physical manifestations might be the result of mental or emotional interactions that we had at some point. And if it's manifesting as an illness, I would say we're talking about unfinished business. I like to use the 10 emotional states. It's a very handy idea, that scale, to identify where we happen to be. When we connect to any one of those people or the roles that they played, teachers, principal, base little league manager, you name it, police officer, any of these roles, when we go into a lower emotional state, it could indicate unfinished business. And so just let me reiterate those emotional states, starting from the bottom, the lowest vibration: shame, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride. And the top three would be courageousness, acceptance, and peace. This is just a convenient way to look at these emotional states. Easy to remember, too. SAG, S-A-G, FLAP, F-L-A-P, CAP, C-A-P. If you can find yourself in one of these lower vibrations, that is anywhere from shame to pride, you would like, okay, unfinished business. We can also use the 12 worlds. This is a model that I created that I find very convenient to look at the various areas in a person's life to see where they're investing energy or not, and fairly easy to represent because I start from the top: the spiritual world, the mental world, the emotional world, the physical world, family world, career world, financial world, social world, leisure, community, political, and maintenance. We're investing or not energy into each of these, and we have feelings about these worlds. We can identify them from the emotional states. We can identify them in a whole bunch of ways, and we'll know whether we've got unfinished business. You could literally look at the needs that I referred to before: survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, the need to be right, and the need to look good or get approval. If you can see that if one of those is overly developed, in response to stimuli, and then if your need to be right is excessive, and it is for a lot of people, including myself, what would that indicate? Probably being made wrong. It's because now, in order to defend oneself, one needs to be right. And so you get in that constant battle. We can declare peace. And that's really the name of the game, by finishing this business. I want to talk about this phrase, not commonly used. Sometimes it's referred to as a thought, sometimes a thought form. And in Christ's Returns, Jesus refers to it as a consciousness form. So just imagine consciousness for a second as this raw material of everything. Everything is made out of consciousness. That is the energy that the visible world is created out of. When we think, we start molding consciousness into consciousness form, consciousness hyphen form. So if you think of it like that, it's the beginning of the molding or the shaping of this stuff of which all of us are made, and everything that we can see or experience is made. As we start thinking the thought over and over again, that we start shaping and intensifying and solidifying consciousness. Over time, it will go from the spiritual to the mental to the emotional and show up as physical manifestation. So, if you look at consciousness as, if I were making pancakes, I would talk about, oh, look, pancake batter. Or, if I were making cookies, oh, look, cookie dough. Or, how about biscotti? Oh, biscotti dough. Right? That, it's the substance out of which everything is made. That's what consciousness is. And so, when we start to add thought after thought after thought to this consciousness form that we created by thinking it, now all of a sudden that consciousness form itself becomes magnetic. It almost appears as if it takes on a life of its own, and it seeks more of its same kind of energy, and it seeks to express. Jesus would say the viruses like AIDS and other diseases on the planet Earth are really consciousness forms that people have fed with their fear. That's intense. I think it's our resonance, our vibrational alignment with the energy of the consciousness form that allows energy to flow to us and through us into that form. The main point is we can choose what consciousness form to focus on. And we do this by our choice of what vibration to offer to the objects of our attention. We literally would turn around and offer an energy. As we offer that energy to that consciousness form, to the thing we're thinking about, more energy of like vibration is returned to us. We are supplied with what we're being offered. That what we offer, what we express, what we say, what we think, what we feel is like a demand of the divine. Give me more of this vibration. Even if that vibration, we distort it as we bring it into us. Importantly, finish business. How is that characterized? How would you know business is finished? If you can look at a sequence of events, if you could look at a person or a circumstance or a situation or an activity, and you have feelings of acceptance or peace or compassion or forgiveness, you have finished business. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth, letter 8. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know that it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. It is so. Thank you. Amen.